Welcome back to another episode of Vanguard Radio. I'm your host, J. Richard Jones. Command, communications, control, computers, intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, otherwise known as C4ISR. All of these elements are a crucial facet of the Canadian Armed Forces, or CAF, operations. And they're also a growing area that is getting a lot more attention in recent years because they're important to all of the communication process, data, and technology. In this episode of Vanguard Radio, I'm excited to speak with Lieutenant Colonel Ian R. Graham, Director of Land Requirements 4 at the Department of National Defense. Lieutenant Colonel Ian Graham is currently the Directorate Land Requirements Section Head, and he's responsible for projects that are focusing on command and control, the C2 portion, as well as electronic warfare and simulation in support of training systems. First, a little bit of background about our guest. Lieutenant Colonel Ian Graham joined the Canadian Armed Forces in 1990, graduating from the Royal Military College in Kingston, Ontario in 1995 with a degree in computer engineering. Since that time, he has served in Petawawa, Bosnia, Afghanistan, Kingston, Iraq, and Ottawa. He has held a variety of staff positions, including managing C2 system security accreditation, multiple postings as a project manager and project director focusing on delivering tactical land C2 systems to the Canadian Army, and various operational communications planning positions. His operational deployment include a six-month tour in Bosnia in 2003 as the Task Force G6 operations deployment to Afghanistan in 2006, as the Canadian Battle Group Signals Officer, and finally to Kuwait as the Operations Impact J6 in 2013. As a major, he commanded 1st Squadron, Canadian Forces Joint Signal Regiment, and has attended the United States Marine Corps Staff Program in Quantico, Virginia. Within DLR, Lieutenant Colonel Graham is currently focused on advancing the Army Land C4ISR capital projects and specifically looking to enable more agile approaches for high-tech capability development. Lieutenant Colonel Graham, welcome to Vanguard Radio. It's truly a pleasure to have you on our show.
Thank you very much.
To set the scene a little bit, you were one of our key speakers at the C4ISR and Beyond 2019 event produced by Vanguard Magazine. And we're very appreciative to have you as a presenter. I think it sets the scene very well to ask you if you could provide our listeners with a brief overview of the presentation that you gave at C4ISR and Beyond, which really will set the tone for the rest of this podcast.
Okay, so what I'd say is I really saw that presentation was about two things. The first thing was about trying to identify and show to industry what land C4ISR or maybe command support capabilities that the Canadian Army requires to operate in the modern world and in modern sort of warfare. But the second, and maybe more importantly, it was about the innovation in the processes we use or we follow to develop and acquire these capabilities. You know, going to the first point with respect to C4ISR capabilities, I think that everybody is aware that we're kind of moving into a new digitized world with C2 systems. Sometimes it's called net-centric or digitization, and there's a whole bunch of other terms. But generally, they all kind of get to the same point, is that with the upgrades and advances in IMIT technology, if we implement these correctly, we can create great change. We can create kind of good disruption in how we operate. And I use disruption here in a good way. And, you know, in the commercial industry, it's kind of the way that, say, Google, through new networks and stuff, has captured much of the advertising industry, or through Amazon through the same kind of approach has captured much of the retailing industry. And also from the commercial side, there's a whole bunch of old stalwart companies that are, they're no longer around because they didn't sort of develop quick enough or develop in the right direction. And so they had sort of disruption in the negative approach. And so what I'm saying, what we're looking at there is the Canadian Army, kind of the entry point into getting into this new world and getting these capabilities is acquiring networks to enable this. But the question always comes is what exactly does the Army want to use with these networks for? And I think that kind of comes to the point that these are disruptive capabilities. So almost from the beginning or by definition, you don't know exactly what you're going to use them for. And so you can't kind of predict well in the future. And that kind of leads to the second part of the presentation was, changing the way we acquire these capabilities. Within the defense, we typically procure capabilities based on what I'll call a big bang approach. And this applies to buying tanks or ships, is where you've got to kind of spend a lot of time, a lot of capital investment focused on buying, say, a new tank. Say 550 new tanks, you spend 5 to 6 years buying them, 5 to 6 years fielding them, and you use them for 20 years. And you have to make sure you buy the right tank, because if you buy the wrong tank, you're stuck with it for 20 years. But with IT and IM projects or information management projects, it's almost the reverse. You really don't know exactly what you want to do with them. So you kind of got to buy a bit of them or acquire a bit of them, use them for a bit, figure out more what you want, and then adjust your procurement and your capability development process. And so that's what the second part of that presentation was about, is looking to find in defense and through our project approval and procurement processes, a way to be more, say, agile and iterative, where we can take the capital expenditure and instead of trying to buy a C2 system in the next 5 or 6 years that we're going to use in 20 years, is buy a little bit of a C2 system now and then evolve it. So spreading the capital expenditure out over the complete lifetime of the capability. So I'd say that's kind of what I was talking about at C4ISR and beyond.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, it sounds like you're using technology to be more innovative and flexible in how you adapt. I'd ask, though, in a lot of the interviews that we do, especially over on the IT side with my other hat on, it's not the technology a lot of times, it's the people and process. Is that a big challenge, especially with short life cycles for technology?
So yeah, I think there will be a number of challenges in adopting the short cyclical processes and adopting this change. I think initially the first challenge is one of the programmatics of of our process. Because really, see, for any capital project within the military, there's really three variables that need to be defined: the scope, cost, and schedule. For a conventional project like a vehicle, the Army can define how many tanks we need, and then we can work with industry as the vehicle industry is a fairly mature industry to define with a pretty high level of accuracy the cost of those vehicles and the delivery timelines and also the cost to support. So we can get a good cost estimate that ties in the scope, the cost of the project, and the schedule. But you can't really do that well with IT and IM projects. First off, we're not really exactly sure what we want to do with them, due to their or the capabilities we want them to provide based on their disruptive nature. The IT and the IM industry is also not as mature, so we can't get as accurate a costing. And so what I think we need to get is some latitude or flexibility in the scope of the projects when we get them defined, is that we don't know exactly what we're going to deliver. But from a leadership perspective, I think that what's seen there is a significant risk, is we want a commitment of time and money, but we're not going to say exactly what we're going to deliver. I think with IT and IM in the long haul, we do want to adopt these capabilities. And I think what we have to show is that there's also a lot of risk in trying to, in accurate detail, predicting what we'll buy in 10 years in the IT-IM field. Because if we get that wrong, we'll buy the wrong capability. So there's multiple risks on both sides of that. And so I think as we predict that forward and as we staff our projects and show how we can manage the risk by doing shorter cycles and quickly correcting when we adopt something that doesn't work so well or something we didn't think it was going to be that good, when we see it's very successful, we can reinforce it. We can show that we can spend taxpayers' dollars correctly. So I think there's a desire at the leadership to bring in these agile processes. What's not known is really how to do it. And I think that's as we push forward our current C4ISR projects. That's what we have to develop and show that we can do in a reliable way.
Well, the good news is you have support from Army leadership to to understand that the project almost needs to breathe a little bit and have the understanding that flexibility has to be built in, because today's technology 12 months from now could be completely different and could be more adaptable and be more cost effective. You could actually be recommending a technology today on a long-term basis that would be anti-productive, I guess, in a way. Is that a good way to look at it?
I certainly think so. And, you know, yeah, the technology that's great today, and more so not maybe 12 months. 12 months, sometimes I say things will change less in the next 12 months than you think they will, but far more in the next decade. And so often the procurements for the military are large. And so we'll buy a big change. We have a large investment in training. And often that is the big challenge. Certainly we can buy a shiny new box that can do lots of things, but can we train it right across the Army? You know, when you have like 15 to 20,000 people you have to train, that takes time. And so it's kind of looking out something we buy that we intend to use for 6 to 7 years. If there's a new technology that's going to make that obsolete in the next 2 to 3 years, you know, maybe you just want to hold off for a bit and then buy that and kind of stage your procurements like that.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And that was my next question. I could see that the training and adaptation would be the next challenge. How optimistic are you around projects like inside the Initiative 42 of SSE? Can they be reprofiled to fit into the model of these cyclical procurement cycles?
I'm optimistic they can. And I think it comes down to the staff we have working on them. So within the Army, the staff and director land requirements, we have to clearly paint the operational picture we want and show how that can evolve. And we also have the task of kind of working with the trainers in the Army to show how this can be trained. And then within the material group of D&D, they have the more responsibility of dealing with industry. We have to develop those models to show how this can work and brief it to the center. And so I am optimistic that it can occur. It's just going to take a lot of work and kind of patience. And you also kind of get to the demanding issue of the projects. What we need is, it's always with projects, there's challenges with the staff running that. And it's finding the right staff who are in position for a long enough time to kind of understand the D&D project approval process, understand the procurement process, or the Government of Canada procurement process, how IT and IM is evolving, and also what the Army needs, and sort of melding all those together into an approach that supports, you know, delivering good capability to the Army kind of at the best price and also benefiting Canadian industry. So it's getting the skill sets to do that. That is probably the key challenge. And I think the teams for that are forming with the continued leadership support of this. People want to be involved with things that that are good and cause change. And these SSC 42 projects will cause change. So as they start moving forward, they will start attracting lots of good people to push this forward. And I think that will lead to success.
So it builds momentum. I was going to ask you, that does sound like a challenge to get people with those skill sets, because they're such a wide range. Is there any tips in doing that you could share with our listenership and readership?
So within the government and working with this, there's really kind of two problems. There's the military personnel who are involved with the projects, and then there's the civil servants. And so military personnel are essential to have on the projects because they keep it grounded in the operational realities of the military. And the real challenge of the military personnel is they typically come in for postings of 2 to 3 years. I've been a bit lucky. This is my second time being in DLR, so you get multiple exposure with them. So D&D, I know now, is looking to bring on some additional training programs. So as people come into the acquisition world, they can understand that. And I think really the tip with that is you have to reach out into the Army. You have to find those people with a good understanding of operations, but also kind of have that bigger view of procurement and bring some of those people in for focused in 2 to 3 year periods. On the civil servant side, I have not done much hiring on the civil servant side, but I think, again, that's what you have to do is accurately describe your projects. You do kind of, headhunting, I guess, within the civil servant is done, is finding individuals who have the skill sets who want to be involved in big projects and bring them in. I wish I had more tips on how hiring all of those. It's a process you just have to keep working at, though.
Yeah, no, I think that those are pretty good tips unto itself. I'd like to talk a little bit about larger projects, specifically larger capital projects. One of the benefits is that they allow a large number of incremental project management positions that can be paid out of the capital budget. Do you foresee issues with getting people approved and in place to execute on a cyclical program, or does that tie back into getting the skill sets for the job position?
Yeah, so the funding issue with capital projects, there's kind of two phases. There's the earlier phase we call the identification and the options analysis phase, and that is where the project is, most of the SSC 4 or all the SSC 42 projects are now in the options analysis. That is funded out of Army O&M, our operations and management money. And so it's a challenge to find the funding for that, but that is being worked through. But once you get into the definition or implementation phase, you have your capital funding. At that point, it's not hard to, the funding is there, so you can get the positions. But the real challenge is getting the people. In the IMIT world, it's always a challenge. It's a hot industry all around. So finding those people and just with SSC in general, not just SSC 42, but there's lots of SSC projects. So finding those people is a challenge. But the one key thing I'd say is it's not about big teams. I find I'm always amazed that a small team with the right skill sets, especially in the early phases of the project, the amount of progress that can be made. Because if people know what to do, they can quickly expand the project out. Definitely once you get into the implementation, when you have lots of contracts and you're delivering and you're doing training, you need more capability there. But at the beginning, I'm confident that now we are building the proper project teams and that to start the projects moving forward. And then as those teams will build as we move into implementation. So certainly it is a challenge in the OA phase and the options analysis. It's a challenge to get enough people, but we'll get through that in the next year or two. And then we'll be in the definition phase or the capital funding. And that should work out there.
What about budget restraints? So do you anticipate an institutional reluctance to constrain projects either by funding ceilings or by deliverable timelines in a cyclical evolution rather than by a larger, longer term project with an SOR or statement of capability deficiency?
I don't see they'll be constrained by funding. What I'd say with a defense project, you never have enough money. There's always something more or better. In the vehicle projects, we could always use more vehicles. And so SSC has come out and the defense policy, and there is a lot of funding there's significant funding for all of these projects. Moving to an agile or iterative approach, the key number one thing I think that people have to understand, this is not asking for more money. It's taking the same amount of money and spreading it out over time, over the whole life cycle of the capability. Certainly, and especially in the IT and IM world, you can always do more. You could always use more money. So there will be constraints, and we won't be able to get the super system that we can maybe envision or sometimes you might see on TV. And so we'll have to have some maybe appetite constraints on that, but we'll work through that. I believe there is enough money in the SSC 42 envelopes to fund what we need to do. In terms of project delivery timelines, I think that's where you get into the spreading out the capital over the life cycle of the project. In that the right now, in the Big Bang approach, how most money is programmed, they're looking for lots of capability to be delivered right away. And what's kind of being requested is to relax that and allow capability to spread out over a longer time. And that's, I think, becomes just something we have to work through with the department to show that military operational effectiveness and the ability of the Canadian Army to meet SSC objective is enhanced by spreading out the capital spending over the life of the project. So I think those are all core components of a project, and there's always going to be challenge in delivery timelines, and everyone always wants more funding. I think if we're allowed to spread the capital out, we'll be good, and I think there's enough money there to do what needs to be done.
So as long as the ROI is there, in other words.
Yeah, and I think that's the key thing the project has to show. If we want to get our projects approved, we have to show that there's a good ROI, and we do that by showing these projects enable the Army to meet SSC objectives.
Well, that makes sense. I'd be curious, what type of emerging technology requirements, what do you see that's coming into DLR4? And where do you get this information from? Is it coming from the field? Or is it coming from the Army's training and doctrine process?
Yeah, so in terms of emerging technologies, I guess it's easy to say we want them all. In terms of like technology, every day there's new, and certainly from the vendor's perspective, revolutionary networking technologies being announced, new applications and cyber capabilities and cyber threats are kind of announced daily. So there's a continual stream of that. I was just at CANSEC, and I'd say there's 200 plus booths of vendors showing all these new capabilities, many of which would certainly benefit the Canadian Army. And so for that, what I see, our key role I see within DLR4 is we go to industry and we get briefed on the systems they can sell us. And what I say we have to do is kind of try to step up a level and think of this system that's being briefed to us. What operational capability will it provide? And there's always this risk of sort of vaporware. These companies brief capabilities that may or may not exist. But what I say is after we've been to four or five companies and each of them have briefed their systems and they all kind of provide the same operational capability, likely in completely or often in completely different ways, at that point we can see that that might be an operational capability that we can actually procure and provide. And so that's kind of the flow of showing the stuff coming in that could be beneficial to Canadian Army. Now, for what we need, say we get a feed both from the field force and from the, say, let's say the doctrinal or the institutional portion of the Army. From the field force, we get very kind of focused and often immediate requests for new capability. As they're out on training, things work well or don't work well, they would like some change. And more importantly, when they're on operations, you often see capabilities arise quickly based on maybe new capabilities from opposing forces or just the changing of the world around them. But one of the things I'll say is those kind of capabilities coming back from a unit, that's kind of one unit on one rotation. It might not apply to all missions or all units. And so what we'd like to do is get feedback from a number of units. And that kind of, in many ways, comes back from the Army institution. So while the field force gives us things that may change quickly, where we want to rapidly improve things, it's the institution and doctrine organizations that kind of paint where the Army is going to go in 10 to 20 years. And so we have to kind of collect those two items up. And as we start seeing capabilities that or new capabilities like the Army would like, we then kind of map that with what industry is showing, and then we can start seeing where we should start investing. Now, the key thing I'd say is that in DLR, we in general don't choose the technologies. What we have to do is once we understand what the Army wants, maybe what the potential operational capabilities are there based on current state of technology, we'll write up a statement of requirement. It then goes over to the material group. The material group then lets the RFPs and the contracts to industry, and it's through material group to industry where the technology is selected. And I think one of the key things, though, in many ways, often the trainers are the people who really tie this together, because you get the institution thinking long things in the future. Sure, they may have some error, like 2 to 3, if you're going to go 100 kilometers and you're 2 to 3 degrees off in the wrong direction, you can end up in the wrong place. You also have the field force with individuals providing individual recommendations. But kind of with the trainers, they bring it all together. And that a trainer, sitting in front of a class of 30 people, he's got people often from across the Army. So he's getting each of them giving their requirements feedback. And also through training the systems, he gets to see what people can actually learn and do. And he can also, they often see how often they work out on training exercises. And so and they have an understanding of what they can train to the Army. So that's a good source to bring in, is that industry shows what they can possibly do. We see from the field force and the doctrine where we want to go. And the trainers kind of put that throttle on how quickly we can change the organization. And that's kind of how the whole Army capability development process informs the procurement process, to both spec out what we want, and then as things get brought in, delivering them and training them and turning them into capability.
So it's real-time feedback.
Yep, often real-time feedback.
We have had the pleasure and privilege to be speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Ian R. Graham, Director of Land Requirements 4 at the Department of National Defense. I'd like to thank you for coming on to Vanguard Radio today, and I truly hope that you will join us at the 2020 C4ISR and Beyond event. It's the only one in Canada, and a lot of this type of information really needs to be tabled and discussed there.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been very great, and I will definitely look forward to being at next C4ISR and Beyond.
It's been a pleasure.